Chapter 3 Subterranean Marvels. The next day, Nada, Pearl, Rex, and I went to our favorite mountain lake. Pearl had gone for a walk, while the rest of us were sitting very quietly on the bank. We had been there almost an hour, when the strangest feeling passed over me as if Pearl were in danger. I called to Rex. We discussed my feeling and then hurried in search of her. We passed around a high rock that projected across the trail and saw her standing motionless. Fortunately, we did not call, but walked rapidly forward. As we came nearer, we beheld a huge rattlesnake coiled, waiting its opportunity to strike. Rex always carried a rope around his waist. Without a word, and quicker than it takes to tell, he made a lasso, and with a quick, deft movement, sent it forward, catching the snake just below the head. He killed it instantly and turned to Pearl, expecting to find her greatly frightened. Imagine our surprise when she faced us calm and serene and, smiling curiously, said, "I came upon that snake unexpectedly, but I knew it could not harm me so long as I kept my eyes on its eyes. Somehow I knew you would come." By that time, Nada had come up to us, and we explained the incident. "My dear sister," she said, turning to Pearl, "you certainly have wonderful courage and poise." Pearl looked at her with a peculiar expression we had never seen before. "Nada, my dear," she replied, "you know the great master would not allow any of us to be harmed." Finally, I found my voice and asked, "What master?" She looked at me steadily for a moment and remarked, "What a foolish question. The same master each of you know." Nada threw her arms around Pearl's neck and exclaimed, "God bless you, my dear. How did you know him?" "When I was not quite 10 years old," she continued, "shortly after my mother passed on, a blessed being appeared to me whom I afterwards came to know as the Master Saint Germain. After his first appearance, he continued to visit and instruct me, but I was forbidden to tell anyone, not even my brother, until I was granted permission to do so. He told me to come out here to see Bob at this time, and I noticed an unusual twinkle in his eye at the time he said it, but I did not understand why he was so amused. Now it is all clear. Little did I dream I was going to meet those who knew my beloved angel master, as I have always called him. From that time on, it seemed as though Pearl were a long-lost sister who had returned. That night, we sprung our great surprise on Daniel Rayborn, and he was overjoyed when he learned that Pearl was a pupil of our blessed Saint Germain. The next morning, we all had a real surprise waiting us when we went down to breakfast, for Daniel Rayborn, as he awoke, had received a message from our master, for Saint Germain had asked that all of us meet at the Cave of Symbols in Table Mountain at 8 o'clock the morning of the third day following. That was Thursday morning. Pearl was very anxious to know something about the cave, and after hearing some description of it, remarked, "You will find some very great revelation concerning it is about to take place." At 6 o'clock on the morning indicated, we appeared at breakfast in our hiking outfits, bubbling over with joy and the happy anticipation of seeing our blessed Saint Germain again, for we all felt tremendous things were in store for us. We drove by auto as far as the road went, which left only a distance of about 2 miles for us to hike. The day was glorious, and the very air seemed charged with a magical fragrance, a powerful, highly attenuated spiritual energy. The drive was delightful. We found a safe, secluded spot for the automobile, taking our flashlights with extra batteries, and reached the entrance to the cave at exactly 8:10. We entered the first chamber and were immediately conscious of a powerful vibration, almost like that produced by the throbbing of a great machinery. As we came to the arched entrance of the great inner room, there stood our beloved master. He was clothed in spotless white that contrasted strangely with the hiking clothes we wore. Enfolding each in his divine embrace, He said, "Beloved ones, I greet you in the name of the mighty I Am Presence. This great presence within you will become as familiar to you ere long as you are with each other, as real, as tangible, and as vital. I see it is unnecessary to introduce my faithful pupil Pearl, whose name symbolizes her great purity of soul. I rejoice exceedingly that it has been possible for me to bring together in the physical expression such beautiful souls as you all are. It is a most unusual thing, I assure you, as you will see later. If you will kindly follow me, we shall proceed." He moved toward the archway of white described in the first chapter and stopped about 3 feet in front of it. He extended his right hand, and in a moment, dazzling white light like a dense vapor enveloped the entire place. The entrance to a tunnel filled with a soft white light opened. We entered, followed Saint Germain for a distance of several hundred feet, and at last came to another door on which in raised figures were the ancient symbols of life. Presently the door opened, and we were admitted into a chamber of extraordinary shape and remarkable beauty, having 12 sides of equal dimensions, a beautiful dome forming its ceiling. Each side was made of a different kind of substance. 4 of these panels were dazzling white, each different yet giving off a soft, glowing, sparkling light, and making a square within the 12 pointed figures. The others were of varying colors of most delicate, beautiful shades. The room was at least 60 feet in diameter, and on the east side stood an instrument in a transparent case that looked like a radio as far as I could tell. On each side of this case, forming a circle around the entire room, about 3 feet from the wall, were 12 chairs made of the same transparent metal as the case, one in front of each panel. Saint Germain seated us and stepped to the instrument. "Beloved students," he began, "your surmise is correct. Within this case is the most remarkable radio yet produced on Earth. The case, as you see, is perfectly transparent. Yet the material of which it is made is as tough and strong, or stronger than steel, so hard you cannot make an impression on it with a hammer. The inventor of this super radio will be here tonight, when you shall meet her. I wish you to be my guests here for 3 days. I will see that a written message is delivered to your home by a visible messenger tonight, and that your automobile is guarded. Now, if you will come with me, we shall proceed, as we have much to do before evening." He went to the opposite side of the room from which we had entered and pressed his hand against the wall. A panel slid back and revealed an opening into a large oblong room. "This is a chemist's laboratory," he explained, "in which the great master chemists have been working for the past 50 years, perfecting formulas for the protection of America in the next and final crisis of her experience. After this crisis, her people will be taught the use of the universal energy for light, heat, and power. This will come forth in still greater perfection than has ever been known in any previous age." We went to the far end of the laboratory and passed into another room fully 3 times as large, where electrical experiments were being carried on. This entire room was lined with the same transparent material as had been used in the case of the radio. "Many discoveries and inventions," he continued, "are being brought forth here by awakening the past memory within those who are doing the experimental work. By calling into the outer activity of the mind that which has been attained in previous lives, and adding to this the greater and simpler perfection of the future, those doing this work are preparing wonders and blessings untold for America, her people, and through her, for the world. During the next 70 years, America and her people will scarcely recognize themselves as they look back upon their limited activities of today. These wonderful beings, who have become so clearly aware of their mighty I Am Presence, are perfecting and preparing for actual use many wonderful things for the great benefit and enlightenment of humanity. As people ascend in conscious understanding to the point where such things can be accepted and used, many of these formulas and inventions have been and are being taken from cities hermetically sealed that lie at the bed of the Atlantic Ocean, having sunk beneath its waters when the last cataclysm destroyed Atlantis. These great ones have drawn such formulas from within these sealed cities and are testing and improving upon them. This is how the greater perfection comes forth for the use and upliftment of the race in the coming golden age. The great ascended masters guard, watch, and direct this work. Their students, who have been trained to come and go from the physical body consciously, are the ones who carry out the experiments in the laboratory. The ascended masters are the guardians of humanity and have worked through the centuries from the invisible as well as the physical to awaken, to bless, to enlighten, and lift mankind out of its self-created degradation and selfishness. We have conquered death by complete and eternal dominion over the atomic substance of the physical body and world. All things obey our commands. The laws of nature and the universe are our willing, obedient servants. In these wonderful secret chambers of nature, the work goes on quietly, unknown to the outer world, and wherever the individual seeks the light for the light itself, then truly all things are added. Saint Germain called our attention to one thing after another that had already been perfected, and others that were under construction. I can never put in words the feeling of joy and exhilaration this gave every one of us. One thing in particular attracted the attention of all, and we asked its purpose. It is a mechanical way of quickening the atomic vibration of the human body, he replied, and assisting to raise it into the pure electronic body which Jesus referred to as the seamless robe or the bridal garment of the Spirit. It is composed of pure electronic light, for in and upon it no imperfection can ever be recorded. Light, you see, he emphasized, is substance, energy, and luminosity, all three in one. This pure electronic light, of which the eternal spiritual body is composed, is condensed, as it were, by your mighty I Am presence into a self-luminous substance, which is for you a self-sustained, immortal, ever-expanding, ever-perfect form and reservoir of divine love, light, wisdom, and power from the very heart of God. It is your eternal, individualized temple of life and the heart center of your world of manifested form. It is sometimes referred to as the white fire body, because the dazzling white light it sends forth is so blazing, so intense, and so all-powerful that to the human eye it looks like white fire. The ordinary person can only gaze upon it for the fraction of a second. This is the body in which Jesus made the ascension, and as the light within it increased into that higher octave of life, being a more rapid vibratory action, it became invisible to the watching, adoring multitude that witnessed his ascension. A human eye only records within certain octaves of vibration, but as the human, through self-purification, increases its vibratory rate, the light within every electron of the physical body glows brighter and expands its radiation to such a degree that the physical form becomes first self-luminous, next transcends the gravity pull of Earth, and then is able to express consciously and at will in any octave of vibration the individual desires. He can come and go freely, anywhere within infinity, for the pure electronic light exists everywhere throughout creation. As soon as the atomic structure of anyone's physical body becomes all light, it has entered into the one eternal element, the great universal sea of blazing white essence from which God created all forms. Only in this condition of life is complete freedom, mastery, and attainment possible. This is the reality and ultimate of human existence. Then the human becomes raised until it is all divinity, which is forever free, omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient, going everywhere and doing all it desires, still knowing itself as an individual, self-conscious focus of the mighty I Am Presence. In almost every secret society that stands for constructive activity, or in other words, that recognizes the light as the source of all good, there is always used in their initiations the word raised. That raising is literally, figuratively, eternally, and physically true. For the vibratory action of the physical atom is raised until it all becomes the pure, electronic, self-expanding essence or spirit, the pure God substance, light, light, light. We call this device an atomic accelerator, and it will be used a great deal in the future to assist in raising the physical flesh atom into its divine purity and structure, the electronic body. This perfect body remains forever eternally youthful, beautiful, strong, perfect, and free from every conceivable limitation. In this body, individuals can and do function wherever they choose in the universe, for in it there are no barriers of time, place, space, nor condition. The desire for this perfect condition of existence is an innate idea and ideal within the entire race of mankind, and has been always. In the legends, myths, and fairy tales of every race and nation that has ever existed on this earth, there are stories of perfected beings, immortal, all-wise, eternally youthful, and transcendently beautiful. These stories have a cause, an original idea from which they sprang, and it is this eternal truth of being which they carry forward from age to age, that the ideal may always be held before the mind of mankind. This is the master record upon which humanity was modeled in the beginning, the image and likeness of God, the mighty I Am Presence. If one be a real student of life, he will dig deep into the thoughts and feelings of those beings who express the superhuman conditions, qualities, and transcendent ideals. These the ordinary personality considers impossible because of the greatness of the power that is required to bring them into outer expression. The effort needed to attain and express these divine qualities is more than the ordinary person cares to make. The effort this kind of attainment requires is a sincere, strict discipline of the human sense consciousness until it learns obedience to the pattern of perfection instead of its own selfish, temporary whims and appetites. The real student of life knows that whatever God quality the consciousness of the individual can think about, he can bring into existence through the creative power of his own thought and his feeling of divine love. Divine thoughts, divine feelings, divine qualities, divine ideals can only be found by thinking upon divinity, for they do not exist nor abide anywhere else, and like produces like throughout infinity. Divinity is the light and the perfection of life. You shall see this atomic accelerator in operation while here for your instruction and enlightenment. The ascended masters have permitted it to come forth that more of humanity may know of this possibility and make the needed effort for its attainment at the present time. The ascended masters are masters of love, light, and wisdom. Only through them can humanity understand life and reach attainment, for they know all, have experienced the activity of this earth, are now wholly divine, and master of its forces. They have trod every foot of the path the human being now treads, and know every step of the way. Because of this, they can and do show the student its pitfalls, if he cares to listen and be protected from them, but they will not and never do intrude upon the free will of the individual, for that is his divine birthright, and they respect it. Saint Germain then led the way to the entrance of a shaft in which there was a metal cage or elevator. We entered and began moving downward. We descended about 100 feet, and the cage stopped in the center of a circular room. It was about 20 feet in diameter, and facing us was a stone door. He pulled a lever at the right of the entrance. The massive door swung open and disclosed an immense chamber that contained marvelous, complete equipment for making every kind of material that was used in constructing the various devices in both the chemical and electrical laboratories. In this great room, there were large electrical furnaces and huge rollers for changing the various metals into thin sheets. Everything was electrically operated. "This is the place," remarked Saint Germain, "from which you felt the throbbing vibration within the mountain as you entered the cave. The machinery is seldom operated during the day. Today it is necessary to do so in order to be ready for the work that we are to accomplish tonight and for which you have been invited here. Every kind of material we wish to use is produced right here in this chamber. Of course, we do not need great quantities for the experimental work we are doing, but this work is to bring into practical use for the future, the great genius and marvelous ideals of highly illumined individuals who are fully awakened to the conscious recognition of the mighty I Am Presence and the use of its limitless wisdom and power. It is my desire to explain everything in as simple language as possible, that the essence and principle of it may be most easily and permanently comprehended. It is necessary in the present age to simplify the technical terminology, that the average person may be enabled to understand these truths easily and quickly. The time has come when great numbers among the mass of humanity will awaken to the truth and realize that they have a divine master within them, the magic presence of the mighty I Am. There are many who, from an inner standpoint, are far along the path of enlightenment, due to the previous self-effort and attainment. Yet, in this present embodiment, they are outwardly unaware of it and have not had academic training. Something must be done to give such souls the freedom which they crave and for which they are really ready. They shall have help, and to this end do we work here to give it." Saint Germain then turned to Nada and Pearl and remarked, "Are you weary after so many hours of this kind of observation in what is generally supposed to be man's domain?" They quickly assured him that they were not, and judging from the intense sparkle in their eyes, no one doubted it. "I've never been so vitally interested in anything in my entire life," Pearl replied. "You do me great honor," he responded, "by your intense interest. And it gives me real happiness to know you enjoy it too also. Now, if you will honor my humble quarters with your presence, we shall refresh the outer form. Let us return to the electrical laboratory." We returned by the cage, and crossing the room, Saint Germain stepped to a door leading to the heart of the mountain. It opened at his touch, and we entered an oblong sort of reception hall having a dome-like ceiling. The walls and ceiling were all of a most beautiful, delicate, milk-white color, the floor being covered with a creamy, soft, wool-like material, at least 1.5 inches thick. There were 5 chairs made of semi-opaque substance in a similar cream color, and upholstered in the same soft blue plush as the chairs in the tower room of the Rayborn home. 4 of the chairs were exactly alike, but the 5th one had a high, carved back. Each chair was placed near a door, the largest one being in the center. Saint Germain escorted Nada and Pearl to the 1st door at the left as we came in. He requested them to enter, bathe and clothe themselves in the raiment they found provided, then return to this room and await the summons to dine. Turning to Rex and me, he led us to the far door at the right with a similar request to prepare for dinner. We entered the room he had indicated, and both of us were speechless with surprise, for it was most magnificent, fit for a prince or a king's palace. It was circular in shape, a domed ceiling, finished in white and gold, furnished with two beautiful couches, a chair placed beside each with a long beveled mirror set into the wall between them. There was a curious chest of drawers built into the wall itself, so they could not be distinguished from it except for the handles. The chairs and frames of the couches were both of the same semi-opaque substance that seemed like a metal. Rex crossed to a small opening at our left and asked me to look. I stepped to where he was and saw an exquisite Roman bath, also circular in form. It was filled with water that sparkled and moved incessantly as though charged with the essence of life. Could not find any means of ventilation, yet in every room we visited, the air was clean, fresh, invigorating, and filled with the scent of roses. We bathed, and our bodies felt all aglow with a sense of health we had never experienced before. Lying on the couches were the robes we were to wear. They were seamless, and made of a fabric I have never seen or heard of, something like a rich, thick silk, but very, very soft, and extremely light in weight. The one for Rex was a wonderful sapphire blue, embroidered in gold. The embroidery formed a girdle around the waist and wide bands around the neck, loose sleeves, and bottom of the robe. Mine was white, embroidered in gold. There were also beautiful sandals to match, which fitted perfectly. Our preparation finished, we returned to the reception room. A few moments later, the girls entered, dressed in robes like ours, and they were visions of loveliness. The robes of Pearl and Rex were alike, and Nada's was like mine. Their room was evidently a duplicate of ours, except that it was decorated in a soft pink shade. We were very much occupied comparing notes when the most heavenly chimes sounded through the room, and instantly the middle door opened. We entered and were thrilled at the beauty we gazed upon. Here again, the room was in the same soft milk-white and gold combination. The dome-like ceiling was colored sky blue, and on it were clouds that gave one the impression of really looking at the sky. The walls were draped with the most marvelous cloth that looked like diamond dust, for something in the composition of the fabric gave it an indescribable radiance. This audience chamber was perhaps 40 by 80 feet, and in its center stood a large golden table with a crystal top. At the far end of the room, there was a duplicate of this table about one-third of its size, and around it were placed chairs for six persons. In one corner was a beautiful organ, and opposite, in another corner, stood a piano, the case being made of the same metal-like substance as the other furniture. All were so absorbed in admiration and enjoyment of this beauty that we did not notice Saint Germain and Daniel Rayburn enter until we felt them close behind us. Our beloved master led the way to the small table, where he seated Rayburn at one end and took the head himself. Pearl was placed at his right, and then Rex, Nada at his left, and then myself. When we were all seated, he said, "May I have the pleasure of ordering the food for each one? You see, my culinary department is in the invisible to you, but it is very real and tangible to me." We acquiesced very happily, and he continued, "Let us bow our heads in adoration and praise of the mighty I Am Presence within each of us." In just a moment, and without another spoken word, a crystal goblet filled with a golden sparkling liquid appeared at the right hand of each one. "To the enlightenment and happiness of each of you and of all humanity," he said, raising his glass. And as we drank this marvelous nectar, everyone felt the quickening power of its life-giving essence rush through the body. Next there appeared what looked like a vegetable loaf with a piece of honey cake that was only slightly sweet. These were most delicious, and all agreed it was the most perfect thing we had ever eaten. A fruit salad followed, or at least that was what it most nearly resembled, and Saint Germain said it was most nourishing. For dessert, we ate something that resembled ice cream, refreshingly cool, not ice cold, and with it a kind of angel food cake, but much more delicious than anything we know of in the outer world. Lastly, there appeared crystal goblets filled with a creamy liquid, and as we drank it, a force rushed through our bodies like living light. As each course was finished, the empty service simply disappeared. None of us had ever before partaken of anything half so delicious, nourishing, and satisfying as this marvelous dinner our blessed Saint Germain had produced for us direct from the omnipresent universal substance. As we finished, Rayborn turned to him and said, "This experience that is so amazing, so wonderful to us, is all quite natural and normal to you. We feel that we have never been so honored, so pleased in our lives as we are tonight." "My beloved children," Saint Germain replied, "each one of you has this same mighty I Am presence, the Master God Self and Almighty God Power within you, with which to do these things. You can produce everything you require direct from the universal supply. I have acquired the understanding of how to use this mighty power and how to direct its limitless energy to do my bidding. If you so desire, you too can soon be directing this mighty energy, which is God energy, to do what you now call great miracles. All mankind may learn to do this also if they only will. There is not in the universe to say nay to whatever you desire, so long as it does not harm another of God's children. It requires much less energy and is much easier to produce everything you wish to use directly from the ever-pure universal substance than it is to go through the process of nature to grow it, once you know how." Turning to Nada and Rex, he said, "Will you two, beloved ones, do me the honor to sing two of your own compositions for our enjoyment?" "Gladly," they replied. Nada seated herself at the piano and ran over a phrase of the melody they were going to sing. She stopped, astonished by the tone of the instrument, for it was unlike anything ever produced on earth in musical tone. They sang a favorite, the Arabic love song. Their voices and this marvelous piano produced an effect of indescribable beauty. When they had finished, Saint Germain, with all the grace and courtesy of a courtier, bowed low before them in recognition of the mighty I Am presence which had been allowed to come through so perfectly. "I bow before thy gracious throne of song," he complimented them, "and never have I heard anything more divine. Now let us go to the radio chamber. Friends are waiting us there." When we reached it, we were presented to three ladies and three gentlemen who had arrived ahead of us. They wore the same sort of robes as ours, only of different color. Among them was an elderly gentleman with white hair and beard, who seemed almost feeble. One of the three ladies, whom we shall call Leonora, stepped to the radio and said, "This perfected radio is the result of my work during 7 different embodiments. In 4 of these, I used a masculine body. I carried the memory of it over with me each time, and at last it has reached the perfection intended. This radio possesses 3 fields of operation, that which I term high, medium, and low. In high, it reaches other planets of our solar system. In medium, it reaches anywhere on our own planet Earth, including its etheric belts. And in low, it reaches the interior of the Earth. Let us first connect with some of our cities." In a few moments, we heard clearly and distinctly a lecture being broadcast by one of the most prominent stations in New York. Afterwards, We picked up an orchestra broadcast from another New York station. Then she got connections with London, Paris, Vienna, Cairo, Calcutta, Hong Kong, Melbourne, and Tokyo. Distance seemed to make no difference in clear reception, and at no time was there ever the slightest indication of static. Now, let us reach into the first etheric belt around the earth, she said. Immediately, we heard the most majestic, soul-stirring music, and then a wonderful voice was heard saying, "This is from the golden etheric city over the Sahara Desert. We always know when an earth connection is made, but we have a still higher means of communication. It is the operation of the sound ray to speak over and the light ray to see through. When these two are combined, it becomes the highest form of television. However, the mechanical television will reach a very high state of perfection, and in a few years it will be as prevalent in the outer world as your telephone of today. Oh, that more of humanity might raise its consciousness and become attuned highly enough to have the marvelous use of these rays. You see, the mighty I Am presence within the individual does not recognize time, place, space, or condition. It is only in the outer activity of the mind or human sense consciousness that such conceptions of limitation occur." Leonora adjusted the radio into high, and in a moment we heard a voice saying, "Leonora, this is Venus. We know you, because yours is the only mechanical instrument that reaches us from Earth. Your usual communication with us is over the light and sound rays, so we judge this is for the benefit of others than yourself. Our instruments here indicate the planet with which we are connected by the sound and color of the vibration. The day is fast approaching when your mechanical television will be able to reach us also. Your scientists will not reach this success until they understand that there are etheric rays. They must be made aware of them and taught to use them. This will make all kinds of communication within cosmic space a very simple matter, and it will then become a daily occurrence to keep in communication with us. Within the next 10 years, or perhaps 20, depending entirely upon the harmony maintained among the inhabitants of Earth, a number of our great inventions will be given to those of your people who are attuned to receive them. These will be of very great benefit to your humanity, as is the wonderful atomic accelerator, which is near you. That instrument will one day bless your people tremendously. Call us whenever we can be of service to you. Our love, light, and wisdom enfold you and all the earth." Leonora then changed from high to low, and in about 3 minutes, a deep voice was heard saying, "I recognize your call, and I am answering in person. This is Pelor. It is interesting and encouraging to know there are those on the earth's surface who have some idea of the possibility that God beings can and do exist within the interior of the earth. We think we have less to contend with than you, for we do not have extremes of temperature, nor seasons of heat and cold. We have the eternal white light, which is soft and restful. Our climate is very delightful, like that of the summer tropics on earth. Your America will one day have something quite similar, and yet there will always be some slight change of seasons. They will be much less severe than those you have at present. We have what might be called the eternal sun of even pressure. This produces an atmosphere that is always of equal pressure and harmonious to all who live within it. The mighty I Am presence provides perfect conditions in every phase of its expression. If all the world could but realize and understand this, the terrible agony that fear produces would drop away entirely from the humanity on Earth's surface. You see, I am cognizant of many of Earth's conditions outside of my own activity here, for when we, as you, reach into God's mind, all knowledge can be obtained, because our motive is pure and unselfish. We may not continue these observations further, Leonora explained. At this time, other things demand our attention and service. Saint Germain saw and felt the unanswered questions in our minds as to why there were inhabitants in the center of the earth and what kind of individuals they were, for the idea shocked us, just the same as it does our readers. He studied us all for a moment or two, and then said, "Yes, I will tell you the facts now, since the condition and demand to know the truth is great within each of you. You, as students on the path, who are really trying to understand life everywhere in the universe, must remember to keep the intellect often reminded that there is no place in the universe where self-conscious individuals, and by that I mean individuals who know and are conscious of themselves as creators with a free will, may not go to explore and understand all cosmic activity. There is no place or condition, I say, that they may not go explore and understand what is going on at that point, if they so desire. The idea that the center of the earth is a mass of fire is entirely erroneous. Within the crust of the earth, for a certain depth, there are conditions of the fire element acting. But within the center of the earth itself, there are self-conscious individual beings who, through many cycles of work and self-effort, have mastered the control of certain forces with which they are still working to accomplish the fulfillment of the divine plan for that part of earth. There are also beings who are striving for that same ideal, but working only within the conditions provided by nature at the surface. You must understand and remember that the ascended masters are instructing and assisting in all grades of the outer experiences of life, in every condition found within and upon the earth, as well as on the other planets of this system. Why should it not be a perfectly natural, normal condition that would permit some of their number to be the instructors of those who are working with forces at the center as well as at the circumference of the planets? This revelation is not unnatural or inconsistent with a great, infinite, divine plan. The inconsistent, unnatural condition of humanity is the ignorance, the narrowness, the littleness, the darkness of a human concept that shuts the door upon the stupendous marvels of this glorious universe and says, "I don't believe it. That is impossible." Only ignorance and darkness make mankind believe that anything is impossible. The students of light, who know and really accept an all-powerful source of creation, and what reasoning mind can doubt it when one studies the marvels of the atom, as well as of the cosmic suns, know that the wonders of creation which face us everywhere on our planet are limitless, marvelous, and stupendous. These facts are true. There are many kinds of individuals expanding their light on the planets of our system, and just because one type has not yet had conscious knowledge of others is no proof that they do not exist. Humanity must someday learn a little more of what abides in the universe beside themselves, and this instruction contains part of that new knowledge. It is true, every word of it, and no human ignorance nor doubt can remove that truth from its manifestation in the universe. Clouds may shut off the sun's rays for a time, but they never will be able to put the sun out of existence. So it is with human opinions and ignorance of the past and present. Someday, the light must break through these clouds, and that day is here. It is now. Let the light of truth shine clearly through all preconceived human ideas and opinions. Facts will be revealed that compel all ignorance to disappear into the sea of forgetfulness and be replaced by the great light of the mighty I Am Presence. Now, we shall continue with our other work. The hour is at hand for the ascension of this good brother, he said, referring to the white-haired elderly gentleman, whom we shall call David. Because of previous attainment, he has so attuned his life stream that he may now enter a wider or cosmic wave of expression, and in this great activity he will express far more transcendent phases of individual life than he can possibly do in this present existence. By previous growth and present self-conscious effort in this life, it is possible for the assistance which we can render to be given him. Let us now go to the electrical laboratory. As the door opened, we saw the room was flooded with dazzling white light. We stepped toward the atomic accelerator, and this time it was charged with the very essence of life. Permission has not been granted to give a detailed description of this instrument at the present time, other than to say that the chair in which the one being raised sat looked as if it were made of pure gold. But Saint Germain told us it was a combination of gold and several other substances as yet unknown to the outer world. Saint Germain asked David to take his place in the chair, and certain currents of light began to glow within the chair itself. David sat with his body perfectly at ease, completely relaxed, with his arms resting comfortably on the arms of the chair. There was no mechanism of any kind surrounding the chair, nor within it, and it gave one a wonderful feeling of marvelous, regal comfort. It was positively a most ecstatic, heavenly sensation one received about the whole arrangement. When all were in readiness, and we were very silent, one of the ascended masters of tremendous glory and power suddenly stepped directly out of the atmosphere. He placed those present in the proper position according to their radiation and asked that they join hands to make a complete circle around the chair, the mighty master himself facing David. The persons on each side of the master made their connections with him by placing their hands against his back, just opposite the solar plexus, and Saint Germain stood opposite him, behind the chair in which David sat. The mighty master then gave the necessary direction. "Let each one," he said, "close his eyes, focus the attention with all strength on the almighty power of the mighty I Am presence within. Joyously give praise and thanks that David's body is now raised into its divine perfection, and that he now accepts and receives his full God-given freedom, dominion, and mastery." He then spoke directly to me and asked that I observe the process closely. I opened my eyes and at first could hardly see David's form as the intensity of the light increased. In a moment it became clearer as I seemed to be in some degree lifted with it. Then I saw what almost made me start with surprise, for David's hair had returned to its original color, dark brown. The lines faded from his face, his flesh became the pink of perfect health, and his beard disappeared. I could follow no longer, for the light became so intense that I was conscious of nothing else. The most concentrated part was about his body, but it enveloped us all in the most dazzling radiance. The outline of his body completely disappeared, and involuntarily I closed my eyes. How long this lasted, I never knew. Then our beloved Saint Germain addressed us all, saying, "David's body has been raised into its electronic perfection, and the mighty master, my brother, has taken him for the time being into that realm of light for which he has become fitted through the perfection of his eternal light body. Later, he will return in that ascended form to minister to humanity under divine direction. Come, we shall now go to my quarters." He led the way, and we entered the beautiful crystal chamber, as I loved to call it, where we had eaten our wonderful precipitated dinner. Here we found the required number of chairs placed around the large golden table with the crystal top. This was really his audience hall, but at times he used it as a private dining room for special guests. He took the chair at the head of the table, asked Daniel Rayborn to take the opposite end, and then began one of his amazing discourses. "Tomorrow evening, you, my brother," he said, speaking directly to Rayborn, "shall have a similar privilege as David had today. However, the process in your case will not be completed, but it will start the raising of the atomic structure so that when the time comes for what under other circumstances would be your passing through the change called death, you can have the necessary assistance and raise your outer form into the perfect electronic structure instead of casting it off. I promised," he went on, turning to Nada and Rex, "that there should be no sorrow at your father's passing. Now you can understand why. This is the way we take ourselves out of the hands of the reaper called death, and so we enter consciously into that perfect life, which is the divine light and eternal inheritance of every one of God's children. Many have chosen to take a long time to come to this point, but all must make a beginning sometime, and all must do it eventually. This part of humanity's experience has received almost no acknowledgement. Neither has it been understood nor considered as possible of accomplishment until very recently. Yet, the mighty Master Jesus gave the absolutely perfect example and explanation of it 2,000 years ago. He gave humanity the proof wonderfully, conclusively, and said, 'The works that I do shall you do also, and greater works than these shall ye do.' That statement stands as an everlasting obligation upon humanity until they do it. Mankind has passed over this true meaning and has taken the stand that it is not possible. While all do not need to accomplish it in exactly the same way as he did, yet every human being sometime somewhere must raise the outer or atomic structure into the imperishable electronic body where no imperfection exists. A great many individuals now in physical embodiment are or will be able to do this in the present life with a little necessary assistance, and it is our great privilege to give that. The atomic accelerator was perfected to help give this assistance, and there is no invention or discovery that has or ever will bless mankind to so great a degree. The results you have witnessed in David's body are permanent, real, and tangible. This amazing, real, physical machine is a mighty healing agent, as well as a means by which the body can be raised. It also quickly establishes perfect equilibrium in the brain structure, and through the balancing of the mental and emotional activities of a human being, dishonesty and crime of every kind can be prevented. It was used on Atlantis, although it was less perfect.